Something I forgot. My apology to our guests here, newer guests. That song I just sang, I try to remember to project the words so that you know the words that we're singing. And I forgot to do that, so apologies to you. The song that we just sang, it's four lines, and it's simply names of Krishna in Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari, he enjoys pastimes in the kunjas or the groves of Vrindavan with his friends, Kunja Bihari, and so forth. Different Yasoda Nandana. Yasoda is the mother of Krishna, and Nandana means the son of Yasoda Nandana, and so forth. It's at these, just remembering Krishna by calling some of his names as he's known in Vrindavan in his pastimes. Now, because this is a Sunday program, there's newer people, so I'm going to orient the topic specifically for our newer people. Bhagavad Gita. You're familiar with Bhagavad Gita? Good. Okay. The person who is receiving the message of Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna. And Arjuna is not only Krishna's devotee, but there's a relationship of friendship, according to our devotional teachings. In the spiritual world, where everyone is connected in harmony and a loving relationship with Krishna, there's five primary categories of relationships, or rasa. Five primary rasas. Neutrality, friendship, servitorship, friendship. Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. These five are primary rasas or relationships. And Arjuna's relationship is Krishna's friend. At the same time he's Krishna's friend, he understands Krishna's position as the source of everything. But the intimacy of their relationship is such that sometimes the intimacy eclipses the understanding of Krishna as the source of everything, such that, for example, Arjuna becomes the chariot driver. Krishna becomes the chariot driver. Chariot driver, you know, what does that mean in our culture? There's no chariots to drive. But you could say like a chauffeur, your taxi driver. He's just taking Krishna wherever Arjuna wants to go. Take me into the middle of the battlefield. So he goes into the middle of the battlefield under the indication of Arjuna. So he takes a subordinate position, although he's the source of everything, the ultimate supreme conscious being, because of that intimacy of friendship. So that's a spiritual picture of friendship. And when Krishna had his pastimes in Vrindavan, he had many, many friends and varieties of relationships amongst those many, many friends. And here in this world, there's a reflection, according to Bhagavad Gita. It's a very practical metaphor. The metaphor of a tree and a lake and the reflection of the tree in the lake. In the reflection of the tree in the lake, everything's upside down. The branches are growing down and the roots are growing up in the reflection. chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita. Then there's the tree that's on the bank, and the branches are up and the roots are down. So everything here in this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. But it's a distorted and upside down reflection, because a little disturbance on the surface of the lake, little wind, and the image of the tree in the reflection becomes distorted and disturbed. So this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. There's this saying, I learned that in China they have a similar saying, as above, so below. You heard that one? As above, in the spiritual realm, that's where the source of everything comes from, and this is a reflection of that. So as above, so below. And so here there's friendship, because in the spiritual reality there's friendship. But they go by the same name, but they're not the same thing. Because this is just a reflection. And that's the object. It's a philosophical point. I hope you don't mind. There's, in the spiritual dimension, there's substance, and in the reflection of the spiritual reality, there isn't substance. Here's an apple, and over here is a mirror, and I hold the apple in front of the mirror, and you can see the reflection of the apple in the mirror, but it's just a reflection. There's no substance. There's no nourishment from the reflection of the apple in the mirror. It looks like, but there's no substance. I turn the mirror a little bit, and there goes the apple. It's not there anymore. Now you see it, now you don't see it. It's insubstantial. Things of this realm are not substantial. So the topic is a real friend. So the real friend is the substance one, not the reflection one. However, according to Bhagavad Gita's teaching, we have accepted the reflection to be reality and the reality to be a non-reality. Or that is, at least, we've forgotten that reality. We've forgotten what a true relationship is. We've forgotten what who the source of everything is. And when you forget who the source of everything is, then you get material life. And material life, there's no proprietor of things, except people that grab it and make it theirs. So we enter the world owning nothing, and we leave the world owning nothing, and in between we're very busy making things mine. And then it's all taken from us at the time of death. We may try to pass it on to family members or somebody, but you can't take it with you because it's not yours. And actually, the next person you may pass it on to is not theirs either, any more than it's not yours now. But when we're all gone, everything has a source of emanation, and that which is the source of emanation is the proprietor of everything that he's the source of. So true proprietorship is to recognize everything belongs to the source of emanation, and to engage with everything in that consciousness that there's a source, and we're offering that which is owned by the source to the source, in the service of the source of everything, in the service of the Supreme, in the service of Krishna. And friendship is not only the service of offering things, but a kind of intimacy where it becomes less important who's the source and what's emanated from the source. Like Krishna becoming the chariot driver. There's a nice story that I'll narrate. It's since you all know who is Krishna, I'll give a little description of Lord Chaitanya. So the concluding instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is this very famous and celebrated verse, Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami ma suchaha. Where Krishna is saying, I've given so many teachings and so many principles to live by, but all of those principles to live by, dharma, they're subordinate to one. And that one that they're all subordinate to is mam ekam sharanam. Sharanam means to surrender. Surrender to me alone. Just like in the center of the temple room here, there's a chandelier. It's costly. It's made of crystal. It's not just glass or plastic. It's expensive crystal. And it's all very nice when it's hanging from that chain that's connected to the beam running across the roof. So the lights are nice and the light diffuses through the crystal and so forth, but it's not as beautiful if it's not suspended from the ceiling. If it's just lying on the floor, it's not as beautiful. Its function is to be suspended from the ceiling. So similarly, all the principles that are taught in Bhagavad Gita, they're important and they're valuable and they have some strength to them, but they're subordinate to one thing. And that one thing is mam ekam sharanam, surrender to Krishna. So Krishna came, in part, to restore that teaching which the people of his time, some of the people of his time, had forgotten. And then after Krishna departed, the description goes like this. Krishna was considering, after my departure, the next age of mankind begins. Kali Yuga begins. Because Krishna appeared during a previous age of mankind, called Dwarpa Yuga, and after Krishna's departure, shortly after Krishna's departure, the next, like this is winter, and we know what follows winter is come spring, and what follows spring comes summer, what follows summer comes fall, and winter follows fall, so just, they cycle, the seasons cycle, and ages of mankind similarly cycle, Vedic picture of time moves like that. So, after Krishna's departure, another, you can say, season, another age of mankind comes. And in this present age of mankind, everything diminishes. Spiritual merit, compassion, so many things, memory, so many things diminish. Auspiciousness diminishes. So Krishna began to consider, I gave this nice teaching, this mam ekam sharanam, but how are people going to know how to live their life that way? Because at the age of Kali, they won't be able to easily understand. They'll need a teacher to teach them how to. So Krishna began to consider, there isn't a better how-to method than if I come and teach myself. I could send someone. And from time to time, Krishna does send someone. It's called avatar, one who descends, to teach something. So that can happen, but let me teach myself. So Krishna came in the mood of his own devotee, that who is Lord Chaitanya. Krishna himself, in the mood of a devotee of Krishna, to teach how to. Mam ekam sharanam, how to give oneself fully in service and love to Krishna. He taught that. So one time, Lord Chaitanya was visiting during the 4 months of the rainy season. He was visiting in a very celebrated temple in South India. Those of you from India, you know, Sri Rangam. So he was staying, he was invited as a house guest of the chief priest of Sri Rangam. Name was Venkatabhatta. So while he was staying there every day, he would go see the main deity in the temple, Ranganath. And each day as he would pass to go see the deity, he would see this elder Brahmin sitting there reading Bhagavad Gita. And he was crying as he was reading Bhagavad Gita. So one day, Lord Chaitanya asked him, "My dear Brahmin, when you're reading Bhagavad Gita, what is it that you're understanding that's causing you to cry?" And the man said, "Please don't make fun of me." And Lord Chaitanya said, "I'm not making fun of you, I'm just asking." And it turns out the man spoke like that because he wasn't so literate. He couldn't properly read and write. So he said, "I'm sorry I spoke this way, but I, like many of the other people here in Sri Rangam, they make fun of me because they know I'm illiterate and I'm sitting here reading Bhagavad Gita. So they tease me. And I thought you were also teasing me." He said, no. "I really wanted to know, what is it that you're understanding that's causing you to cry? Now even more so, if you're illiterate, what are you understanding if you're illiterate? It's causing you to cry." And the man then said, "Although I'm illiterate, my spiritual master, when he gave me initiation, he instructed me I should read Bhagavad Gita every day. So I have an instruction, although I'm illiterate, I try to read Bhagavad Gita every day, but I'm illiterate. So that's why I'm sitting here every day reading Bhagavad Gita, trying to read Bhagavad Gita. But if you're illiterate, then why are you crying?" He said, "When I hold Bhagavad Gita in my hand, I see the picture in my mind of Krishna, the source of everything, acting as the chariot driver of Arjuna. Although he's the supreme personality of Godhead, he's acting as the chariot driver of his own devotee. And when I think and I see this image in my mind, it just makes me cry." And Lord Chaitanya said, "You're the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita because you understand the essence of its message. And the essence of its message is there is a source of everything, and that source of everything is a person, and that person has loving affection for those who have loving affection for him, like Arjuna." So he became the chariot driver of Arjuna in friendship. Now, in the world, there's different theologies or different ideas of what is the source of everything. The nomenclature is different. The concepts are expressed in different languages, in different cultures, in different ways. But something that I've learned over the years, although different cultures and different ways express in different manner, there are realities or truths. There's wisdom that's just wisdom. I'm sharing a little bit that I visit China. And in fact, in about a week's time, that's one of the places I'm going to be visiting. And in exploring how the Chinese people view things, one of the ways of making that expression is using, because I know that they have a lot of appreciation for ancient Chinese wisdom. The government supports it, the people appreciate it. It's like in their fabric. It's part of the people, the traditional Chinese wisdom. So I speak of Bhagavad Gita as wisdom literature from India, because that's something they can relate to, wisdom literature. And they hear the wisdom literature of Bhagavad Gita, and of course, of in principle, I speak many of the things that I know that they already accept, because it makes it easier to accept Bhagavad Gita, because it matches ancient Chinese culture. But the, you know, part of the conclusion is wisdom in any part of the world. Wisdom is wisdom. And similarly, friendship is friendship. So there are different ways of going about seeking wisdom and finding these pieces of wisdom and pieces of what a real friend is. So there's different ways in different cultures and languages and so forth. But there's elements that make up what real friendship is. And there's elements of what real friendship isn't. There's elements of what real happiness is, and there's elements of what real happiness isn't. So an element that's the way that it's described in Bhagavad Gita is, for example, if you've forgotten the source of everything, then, as I mentioned, there's no proprietor. So you, although you enter the world owning nothing, one becomes so busy trying to own many things. And that's material life. And your success is how much you own. Or it's a common conception of success. The difficulty is it doesn't bring happiness. Those that don't have wish to have, and those that have wish to have more, and there's never the position of happiness or contentment. It's always insufficient. Because it doesn't really touch who we are. So Bhagavad Gita teaches, wisdom literature teaches, what's really important is to know who you are. And part of knowing who you are is to be detached from the concept of happiness is something out there. Because real happiness is something inside. And when real happiness is inside, you can have or not have, and you're fine. Necessities, okay, but whether you have more or you don't have more, you're fine, because there's the real happiness is within. And that real happiness is resting upon knowing who you are. And knowing who you are, included knowing who you are, is you're part of the source of everything. And so is everybody else, part of the source of everything. And everything is part of the source of everything. And to have that consciousness is different than material consciousness. It's the consciousness of a person that's wise. Whatever the language, whatever the culture, whatever the way people express it and live it. It's a life of wisdom. And that's the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita's teaching is not this ism as opposed to that ism. It's wisdom. It's universal teaching that fits anybody who's wise. And the goal, a beginning and a introductory goal, is to know who you are. And part of knowing who you are is be clear who you're not. Because commonly we identify with who we're not. That's called false ego. The misconception of the body is the self. And when you have that misconception of the body as the self, you lose who you really are. And you lose what real happiness is, and you lose a lot. Because it covers your real, the original and real consciousness, including what real friendship is. So, and now I'm going to share a little bit what real friendship is. Like, it connects with who you really are. This is another little description about Lord Chaitanya. So I was giving an introduction to who, he's Krishna teaching how to live your life according to Bhagavad Gita's message. That's who Lord Chaitanya is. Krishna himself, in the mood and the playing the function of his own devotee, teaching how to take full shelter of Krishna. He accepted the renouncer order of life when he was a young man, and at his mother's request, he made his headquarters in Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri for those who haven't, don't know where that is in the geography of India, it's on the east coast and by the sea, and it's one of the oldest and celebrated temples in all of India. And there's a very celebrated deity of Jagannath. So it's Jagannath Puri. And every year, the largest single attended event in the world for centuries is the festival where Jagannath comes out of a temple and is placed on a several story tall cart pulled by ropes, and he goes in a procession down Grand Road to another place and then returns after some time. That's Jagannath Rath Yatra, a very celebrated event. So many devotees would come to spend time with Lord Chaitanya and take part in that festival, the Jagannath Rath Yatra festival. And it was at the beginning of the rainy season, so they would stay with him for the duration of the rainy season. It was a good excuse to spend time with him. So they stayed for 4 months, and at the end of the 4 months, it was time to return. And they were very reluctant to leave his association, but they had their duties, so they would return. And in groups, Lord Chaitanya would invite his devotees to come and spend some time with him and give them some parting instruction. Very intimate, affectionate exchanges of different types according to the personalities. So there was a group from a particular village, Kalina Gram, and the head spokesperson said to Lord Chaitanya, we're householders, we're covered in ignorance, we don't know who we are, we don't know what our duty is, so could you please give us, householders, some instruction, what our duty is? As householders? That's a good question. Very open-ended. And they asked the same question in successive years. And the answer was the same answer, but it was some modification. That the main duty of householder, of course, you carry out your duties within the family and community, but the personal duty is, as far as possible, chant the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, as much as you can throughout the day. And second, whenever you have the opportunity, you render some service to the Vaishnavas, to the devotees of Krishna. So hearing those two instructions, they knew how to chant Hare Krishna Mantra. So the question asked following that one was, how do I identify who is a devotee? So in the third year, he gave the description, the following description. A devotee is one who, just by seeing them, they remind you of Krishna. The function of a devotee is to be such a friend that you remind people of Krishna. So remind people of Krishna doesn't mean you neglect their body or their mind or their emotions. You just like remind them of Krishna. So there's the Vedic picture of a person is we're a soul within a little package. A gross body and a subtle body, that's the package. And the package is part of the temporary identity that we accept. So there, but there's the soul that's animating the package, the gross and subtle body. So when we have friendships and have relationships, we deal with the body and we deal with the mind. But we must not forget who the person really is, that's the soul within. And we attend to all the parts, the soul, the body, and the mind, or the heart. And that's the package. So when we have relationships with others, the essence of whatever it is that we may do, if it's being a friend or being a parent or being a whatever it is, we may do some things that are in relation to the bodies and the minds of one another, but the function of friendship is to remind people of Krishna, because That's who we are. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Now I'm going to tell a little Prabhupada story to illustrate this. And it's a nice story. Prabhupada was, in his earlier days, he was a householder. He was married and had several children. And as the children grew up and became of mature age, he entrusted his personal business to the sons and entrusted the care of his wife with the business to his sons. And he went to take a more renounced position living in Vrindavan. He lived in Vrindavan for some time. And his spiritual master had instructed him to take these teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the teachings of devotion, to the English-speaking parts of the world. So he prepared himself for some period of time, nearly a decade, and then he came to America. He came to America right at the time after World War II, when countries were just starting to allow tourist visas, because after World War II, like, no visas. The walls were up. People couldn't go freely from one place to another. But when that relaxed a little bit and tourist visas were then starting to be given, he got a tourist visa to come to America. That was 1965. And after some difficulty making some established presence in America, it was started in very warm and friendly New York, but somehow it worked out that he had a little storefront to give the teachings of devotion to the young people of New York. The program that was conducted at that little storefront was very simple. Just as we do in our temples, there was kirtan, chanting, and then he would speak a little from Bhagavad Gita, and then more chanting and dancing, and then prasadam, same as we're going to do shortly. And it was three nights of the week, and through a period of time, lots of young people, the buzz was out. Swamiji is really, you know, a nice person, and he gives really nice teachings, and the prasadam is really good too. So the attendance started to grow. And at one point, one of the elder persons, leading persons, said, "Is it okay? This is so nice here in the storefront, but can we take this out into the public?" And Prabhupada said, "I was just waiting for you to ask." "Yes, we can go to the public, but you have to get a permit because we don't want to have a problem with the police." So they got a permit, and it was at a park, Tompkins Square Park. And so from the storefront, they went in procession around the corner over to Tompkins Square Park and sat underneath a big elm tree for 3 hours. This is the first outdoor giving of Krishna Bhakti to others. So 3 hours of kirtan, there's lively young people dancing, playing musical instruments, very joyful. A crowd came around. And at the end, the chanting was over, Prabhupada stood up in the midst of this crowd of people. There people are wondering, what's this man from Mars going to say? We've never seen anybody look like him before. And he said the following: "I've not come to teach you something new. I've come to remind you of that which you have forgotten." Cool. Because what we've forgotten is who we are. And because we've forgotten who we are, we've accepted another identity of who we aren't as who we are. And we're living our lives accordingly, in illusion. So not only who we are, but where has everything come from? We forgot that also. It's knowledge, according to the wisdom literature of the Vedas, that knowledge we already know, but it's forgotten. It's covered by illusion, and as illusion is removed by awakening of that dormant knowledge, then we can remember what we've forgotten. The whole picture. It's already there. It's a very different process than bringing some information from out there, putting it on your hard drive, and then you can recite and get an A in your exam and get a job. That's a different kind of knowledge than this kind. This kind of knowledge is knowledge that's already there. It just is to be awakened. And the method for it to be awakened is sound. So Prabhupada was acting as the friend of that audience, those people in Tompkins Square Park, by letting them know that I'm your real friend. And my function as your friend is to remind you of Krishna. He didn't use that language, but that's what he was doing. He was being their best friend. In Bhagavad Gita, those of you that like reading Bhagavad Gita will know, there's at the end of the very last verse of chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of him, that's Krishna, being Suradam Sarva Dehinam. He's the best friend of Sarva Dehi, those who have bodies, all embodied beings. He's the dearmost friend because he's situated in the heart. And he is our very most friend. And your best friend is one who reminds you of Krishna, who's in your heart, as your best friend. Now, we may do so many other things as family members, community members, etc., 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 etc. We have different kinds of relationships. But you can be the best friend or the best mother, best father, best citizen, best whatever, if that core function is part of what your life is made up of. That is, you act as the friend. You're the true well-wisher of others. Again, the shape and form and culture and language and the color of the whole thing can look very different. Not a cookie cutter, it's got to look like this kind of formula. It's a principle, being someone's friend in all the varieties of relationships that we have in our lives. And I want to share one other final little story. It's from Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, to help fulfill the function that he came, those that you came a little bit late, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself teaching how to live your life according to the Bhagavad Gita teaching. That is, take full, mam ekam sharanam, take shelter of Krishna. So one of the ways to do that was to awaken the consciousness within the soul, the consciousness of being in service to Krishna. Very simple example. Many of you cook, or at least you have a kitchen in your house, or apartment, or wherever you live. So in your kitchen, probably there's some kind of lentil or bean, or if you're from India, dal. You have it, you keep it in a jar or a bag or something like that. And at some point, you may want to have bean sprouts. So it's a really simple, it can just stay in that bag for years, probably for hundreds of years, because there's a nice packaging system by nature, nice shell. But however long you keep that in the bag or in the jar, it's just going to sit there until you're ready to sprout. You reach in, take some out. And the sprouting process is very simple. There's life inside, but it's dormant. And when you place that seed in some water by the light of the sun on a dish or something, that's it. And the life that's in starts to wiggle. and the hard shell gets a little softer, and the life starts to manifest, and little sprout comes out through little shoots, and the hard shell falls off to the side, and you got, you know, the life that's inside becomes manifest, and you just keep growing that sprout, and it becomes a plant that produces more seeds and more sprouts. That's nature's way. Similarly, as within the bean seed, so also within the heart, there's dormant consciousness of our, who we are, and our eternal relationship with the source of everything. It's already there, just covered, like the seed is covered. And it'll stay like that until there's a method to bring it out, and that method to bring it out starts with sound. And the most powerful sound is mantra. And through mantra, this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, this awakening of that dormant consciousness comes out. So Lord, that's one of the things that Lord Chaitanya gave, is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, to awaken that consciousness of who we are and everything else that we've forgotten. And there was a person who was Muslim born, but from his childhood nonetheless, he just had this thing within him somehow that he liked chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he did it practically incessantly from childhood. So in his adulthood, he became the acharya, or the teacher of the holy name. And he had an appropriate name. His name was Haridas. Haridas was his name. So Haridas, being a Muslim-born person, was seen as a threat to the Muslim government because he had become, you know, to their eyes, he left his Muslim tradition and took on, to their eyes, a Hindu tradition or a non-Muslim tradition, something foreign, and people were considering him to be a saint. And that was a threat, because people that were Muslim were becoming like him, because they considered him a saint. So there was a qazi, that's like the chief magistrate, and he complained to the king, "You better check this man, because if you don't, you're going to lose your citizens, because they're going to become like him. So you have to take action." So the king said, "Well, then bring him here to see me." So he's going to make a judgment on whatever should happen with him for his leaving his Muslim faith and taking this other. So while he was waiting to come before the king, he was put in a prison. The place is Puglia. It's near the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And when he went into the prison, there already were in the prison many noble people from the area, people that were virtuous and well-educated and sophisticated, and they were also a threat to the king, so he put them in prison. And when Haridas came to the prison, they word spread fast. So they petitioned the people in charge of the prison wards, to please let us just go see Haridas. So they agreed. They went to see Haridas. And when they went to see Haridas, they were like, "Wow, a saint has come into prison. How fortunate. Our lives have become so fortunate. Please give us your blessings and benedictions." So he gave a very curious benediction. He said, "May you stay as you are." And they went, "What? How's that a benediction?" And he said, "I don't think you understood what I meant. Let me explain what I meant." And so there's three parts. Right now, you're in difficulty. Not stay in difficulty, but because you're in difficulty, you're because you're in difficulty and you're pious, you're taking shelter of God. May you stay in that mood, not of being in difficulty, but in the mood of taking shelter of God. And second, because you're in prison, the objects of the senses aren't available to you. So you're sense controlled. Your mind has gone to God, your senses aren't controlled. You're in a fortunate position. So may you stay like that. Then he said, in just a few days, I'm telling you, in a few days, you'll all be released from prison. And when you're released from prison, don't go back to business as usual and become sense gratifiers and forgetful of your relationship with God. Stay in that position of being mindful of your relationship with God and stay in the position of controlling your senses. That will be good for you. So he was acting from his heart and from his words as their best friend because they had forgotten. Now, circumstantially, they were more mindful than otherwise of God because of the difficulty they were in. And that's the nature of pious people. It's right in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7. Pious people, when there's some difficulty, pious people turn to God. So they were pious people. That's why they were in jail. It was a threat to the Muslim government of that time. And so their piety was having them turn to God, but when the circumstance were to change, they may not feel that same intensity. So a good friend, all of us, because the nature of the place where we live, it's a place of duality. Duality means wherever there's this, there's that. It's nighttime. Wait a while. It's going to become daytime. It's wintertime. Wait a while. It's going to become spring. There's happiness and there's distress. There's wet and dry and cold and hot and honor and dishonor and there's duality. It's the nature of the place. So we all have circumstances in our lives when we're called upon for someone that's dear to us, or maybe even someone who you don't even know, because that happens to me sometimes, quite a bit, people have some distress, and they bring their distress, and it's like, help. So when those circumstances come, it's invariable, it happens with all of us, please bear in mind, be the friend of that person, not just comfort them, in various ways that you do also, but somehow and at the heart of that exchange, help them remember Krishna. Help them remember what they have forgotten. That connection with who they are and who the source of everything is. Now, you can't be that kind of a friend. You can't give remembrance of Krishna. You can't give anything if you don't have it. You can't give money, you can't give comfort, you can't give shelter, you can't give something you don't have. When you give whatever it is that you give because you're a well-wisher of this other person, a family member, friend, or whoever, the best friend is one who reminds others of Krishna, just like Hari does. And that's how you can be a best friend, and that's who your best friends are. Not just people who help you out when you're in a difficult situation. That's part of friendship, but that's the reflection part of friendship and the essence of the friendship, that tree that has its reflection in the lake, is that connection with the source of everything. So become two things. Become connected with the source of everything and remind others of that connection with the source of everything. Establish by receiving from those who have that connection, remembrance of Krishna, and remind others of Krishna. And that's who your best friends are, and that's being the best friend of others. Again, the shape is going to be very different for different people and different cultures and different languages and different personalities and different relationships. That's just fine. Diversity is fantastic. Essence is the essence, not diversity is the essence. The form is not the essence, the substance is the essence. Be a true friend. And one of the ways, one more time, one of the ways to be a true friend is to have received friendship. To be able to give love, you have received it. And you feel it, and then you can give it. So that Bhagavad Gita is such a text that is meant for this age, for people who have forgotten, to again remember what they have forgotten. And you take Bhagavad Gita with someone who understands it, like this man that was reading, couldn't, in a literate sense, deeply understand its message, but from a spiritual sense, he deeply understood its message. The kindness of Krishna, the reciprocation that Krishna gives to those who extend themselves to him. It can be very simple. And with guidance, understand Bhagavad Gita and share Bhagavad Gita. So there are many opportunities in this, the Hare Krishna temple here and here and there and there. And the community members that are out living their lives in their homes, like many of you are doing. And they have little gatherings where they discuss Bhagavad Gita's teachings and how to apply it in their everyday life. And share that with others. Connect with such groups if you're not sure who they are or where they are. People at the reception desk, they can help connect you. And so it's an invitation to be a friend and have real friends. So that's our topic for the evening. Now he's got a microphone in case somebody would like to discuss something about this a little bit further. He takes some questions. Any thoughts or comments you'd like to share? If not, we'll go on to the next thing.